All right, Andy Benoit, love his work, MMQB, joining us right here on Sports 1140. Andy, great to have you on. It's Grant Napier. How are you?
Hey, Grant, I'm well. How are you doing?
Doing good. You know, it's interesting. Most of last year, because of what we saw from Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz, the prevailing thought from a lot of football fans were, gee, Jared Goff must not be very good. He can't play. Here we are 12 months later, and nobody's saying that anymore, are they?
Not today, they're not. No, it's interesting, and I got assigned to write a story about Goff, kind of an impromptu one, by my editors this morning. And 5 days ago, I had written about Goff throwing the lost ceiling, the lost game on the interception in Washington, a really bad interception just 5 days ago. And now here we are talking about Jared Goff looking like the number one overall pick. It's kind of a knee-jerk reaction business that we're in. But I think what we've seen from Goff, look, he's going to be up and down this season. I mean, this week is an up. He'll have some downs at some point. Hopefully the downs won't be as low as that bad interception in Washington. But I think overall what we're seeing is the real deal, in large part because stylistically he really fits what his new head coach, Sean McVay, is wanting to do. And I had a conversation with someone at NFL Films today. You could argue that Goff is really just an amplified, a better version, talent-wise, of Kirk Cousins. They have similar skill sets. Goff has a little bit of a higher ceiling. So there's a lot that can work with McVay's system and Goff together. I think it's a pretty good marriage.
All right, I want to talk to you about the Raiders and following you on Twitter. The one thing you do, you break down these games, play-by-play-by-play. And you had a lot of thoughts on the Raiders' win against the Jets, who obviously look like they got some real issues. Give me one or two things that really stick out when you see the Raiders on film.
I think they are very good out of spread formations, and a lot of that traces back to Derek Carr. He works well with his new offensive coordinator, Todd Downing, another young offensive coach. And Carr is, I get the sense he's more comfortable with Downing. And we know what a natural thrower of the football he is. They're doing some pretty good expansive things when they spread out and go to empty. And they really hurt Tennessee with that a week ago, and they were good again against the Jets with it. That's one thing that stands out. The other is Marshawn Lynch. He looks to me, and it's only 2 weeks, and he's as fresh now as he's probably been since he entered the NFL because of his time off. But he looks like the Marshawn Lynch of 3 or 4 years ago, the way he's finishing runs, some of the impromptu lateral movement that you see. He's a good running back for them, and he really fits their style of play. They like double teams up inside. They're a power offensive line. They're not an agility offensive line. And Lynch fits that attitude and mindset. I think he really works for what they're wanting to do.
All right, that's offensively. Anything stick out to you on defense? Because obviously if people want to talk about question marks with the Raiders, that's where they point to.
Yeah, it is, and I think there are question marks. The linebacker position is hugely in flux, and it's probably one of the five worst linebacker situations in the NFL right now. They can hide that a little bit with their defensive line, although that D-line you'd like to see to be a little more active on a down-to-down basis. I think it has eruptive moments. It's capable of being more active, and I think it will be. That's a talented defensive line, and they've got some new guys, some young players in there that have really added to that. And then we're going to find out about their secondary. Garyon Conley was excellent in his debut against the Jets last week. And if he becomes a prominent outside starter for them, that solves some issues. It doesn't solve everything. They still have to cover the slot. The safeties are a little bit of a week-to-week proposition. I think Carl Joseph's playing faster. His upside's big. So questions all around, but more silver linings now than there were at this time last year. You have Conley, you have the rookie defensive lineman, Carl Joseph's getting better.
You can follow Andy Benoit on Twitter at Andy_Benoit, B-E-N-O-I-T, NFL analyst and staff writer for SI and the MMQB. You had some observations on the Packers, and we kind of thought that last Sunday we'd get a real good indication, even though it's only week two, and anyone that thinks the Falcons aren't going to bounce back, they look pretty good. But give me your thoughts on the Packers and some of the issues they're facing.
I think there's two issues with Green Bay, and one of them is very solvable. We can actually just scratch it off quickly. It's Aaron Rodgers and the style of that offense. They tend to be inconsistent because he's an unconventional quarterback, and he's not always going to follow the play design, even when the play design works. And a lot of times, he more than makes up for it. And a lot of times when things don't work, he still makes the play. I'm not saying he's anything less than a top-shelf superstar. But what I'm saying, he is unconventional, and a consequence of that is going to be bouts of inconsistency. And we're going to see that from time to time. But the bigger issue is their secondary. And what I noticed watching this the Seahawks film, and it got totally obscured because Green Bay's defensive line obliterated Seattle's makeshift offensive line. But when you put on the coach's film, that secondary really struggled against receivers whenever receivers were crisscrossing paths. They call those switch releases in the NFL. So guys start inside of each other. They go outside of each other, zigzagging around. And man coverage, which Green Bay loves to play, that really is challenging against those kind of route concepts. A lot of teams in the league do it. Atlanta does it very well, and I was not a bit surprised that Atlanta came out and really had their way with Green Bay, especially throwing inside against them. Green Bay was more vulnerable on inside switch releases than outside.
Andy, I love getting people like yourself who break down the NFL the way you do. Your opinion on why apparently it looks like so many teams have trouble with their offensive lines.
I think what Bill Belichick said the other day about practice time, that's real. What gets overlooked, teams, not only are they practicing less, but a lot of their practice has no contact rules. And we think of no contact as why you can't tackle. Well, it also limits your pass blocking, and it limits your bump, and you're not allowed to do bump and run coverage in these mini camps. So what we see are the two areas that struggle the most, and part of it's also just the nature of the NFL, but offensive line and cornerback play, what we're talking about here. And keep in mind, the defensive linemen, they're already better athletes than the offensive linemen. They're quicker, they're faster. They're not stronger, but they can play with leverage, and they're the aggressors, so the O-line still has to react to them. So there's an advantage for the defense, just like a receiver has an advantage on a cornerback because the receiver knows where he's going. He's in command. So these positions where you have to react to people, offensive line, you react to the defensive pass rush, cornerback, you react to the route. Those reactionary positions are really getting hurt by the no-contact rules in practice because in football, in order to react to people, you have to contact them. So guys just aren't able to practice their craft the same way. And I think Belichick's really onto something when he says that's the main driving issue. But it's the same for all teams.
That's right. And it's not going to change. If anything, it's going to continue to go in the direction it is now with science and the data as it relates to CTE. The latest about Aaron Hernandez saying that he had severe CTE. And with more and more studies, as more and more autopsies are done and more research, it's good. That trend's not going the other way ever again, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then the CTE thing, that's a slow process, and that's a conversation. Honestly, I don't like the conversation because it's threatening to the sport I love.
Right.
But it's much too important to not have. I mean, no one in their right mind would say we should look away from that. So, but let's not rush into it either. That's a long game.
Good point.
And we'll have to see how it goes. And that's really for not for you and me, Grant. For the scientists and the doctors and people who know.
No, I understand. And I'm not even trying to get into that. The point I'm trying to make is if you look where we were even just 5 years ago and look at where the game is heading now with constant rule changes, et cetera, you talk about practices. I mean, it's just, I think we're heading down a road that I don't have a crystal ball any more than you do, but it's a little bit frightening when you see these studies continually come out. Hey, when you look at, we got 2 weeks and one game in the books, and I think most people that I talk to that cover the NFL like you do, you really need a good 4 to 5 weeks before you see the real teams. Is there a team right now that you think a lot of people are not talking about that's caught your eye?
Oh, that's a good question. I have to cycle back and think of all the – I mean, I've seen all but three of the games so far. I've got those three games to go. The team that no one's talking about, Philadelphia, I'm intrigued with what Philadelphia
this
is doing.
This is a message from Municipal Services
Bureau.
They have a pass
rush, a
Please
really
be advised
good natural
that this is neither a sales
rush,
nor a solicitation
and
call.
Become a
we
more
are contacting
offense.
You in reference to an important matter. Please call us at 1-844-705-4613 as soon as possible. We are open until 11 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, Monday through Friday, and 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. Time
that
on Saturday.
The field for these deeper dropbacks. Torrey Smith, Alshon Jeffrey, and there's no doubt that they are going in that direction. They've been really vertical in their passing game. Now, it's been hit or miss, but you have to look at the process as much as, if not more than the results this time of year especially. And I think their process is good. We'll see about their offensive line, and yep. That'll be a big factor. But I like the concept of Carson Wentz and a more expansive downfield offense. I like that.
You know, and then you talk about, you know, the NFL, a game of matchups, and you look at this Sunday, and let's face it, you know, it's a pretty much a must-win game for the Giants. They go to 0-3. I don't see it. You've got a banged-up Philadelphia secondary. You got to figure the Giants are going to have to come up with some type of game plan to give a little bit more protection. Give me your thoughts on this matchup Sunday.
Well, yeah, it's hard. The Giants can't block the Eagles. I mean, that's borderline irrefutable.
Right. Yep.
So then the question, and look, this is nothing new for the Giants. They know what their offensive line is, and they've had these issues for years. So then the question is, how do we beat them without having to block them? And they've been a quick strike, three drop, even in their case, two step drop back passing team, and that's worked very well for them. So I think the answer to your question, Grant, is we have to see where Odell Beckham is. His health is a big, big factor because he's the backbone of all their route concepts. Brandon Marshall has to play better. They have to figure out what they're doing with Evan Engram and maybe reduce what they try to do and define his role a little more. It starts with their passing game, though. They're not built to win with their run game, and they don't have the offensive line to rely on to have a deep passing game. So can they be an efficient, quick-strike offense? And look, they've done it before. They've done it. They were 11-5 last year. I know their offense wasn't very good, but it was good enough for them to go 11-5 with a good defense, and they still got a good defense. So no need to panic in New York, but you're right. This is a very big game coming up for them.
Yeah, and you talk about the rookie tight end. He's in concussion protocol. He may not even play on Sunday. But they do get – if they get Jenkins back at corner, obviously that's a big help. You know, when you look at Carson Wentz and his development and what he did last year opened eyes, and you talked a little bit about him and his development in year two. When you look at him on film, break it down for me. Tell me some of the things you really love about his game.
I love that he can extend plays without necessarily having to break down the structure of the play. So, and what I mean by that, and the best example of it, and he's not playing now, but Andrew Luck's the best I've seen at this, and Roethlisberger's been good over the years too, but Luck is a little more pristine. When he extends the play, he stays in the pocket, he keeps his throwing fulcrum, he doesn't necessarily relocate, he keeps the route combination and the play design alive. Now, that's part of the reason he takes so many hits, and there's a fine line to walk there. But when you can do that, when you can extend a play without breaking it down, that you become very dangerous that way because every play is designed to get open. And at some point, if you give a play 5 or 6 seconds to unfold, 99.5% of them will get open at that point. So Wentz can give you that dimension. He's big, he's strong, he's willing to stay in the pocket. And he has the arm to throw anywhere on the field. He is one of the better outside throwers in terms of velocity. He's right up there with Matthew Stafford, Cam Newton. He's not quite where they are, but he's in the bottom of that class.
We're talking NFL football with Andy Benoit, MMQB. I want to talk to you about the defense of the Pittsburgh Steelers. How good do you think they can be this year?
Really good. Really good. They got a lot better in the second half of last season. In fact, I think they led the league in fewest yards allowed in the second half of last season. And it was a fast, young defense. They needed an edge rusher, and they needed a slot corner coming in. They got one of the two. They're still going with William Gay at slot corner. They are better at the other corner spot, especially with Joe Hayden there and Artie Burns coming on in year two. But adding that edge rusher, and he's not going to play this week. He's hurt, but we're talking big picture. T.J. Watt's a game-changer for them because he looks, through 82 snaps, which is what he's played, he looks like the real deal. And you can usually tell pretty quick with the edge rushers because it's either can they bend around the corner athletically or can't they? And if they can't, you have to wait and see if they can develop their game. If they can, you're ready to play with them right now. And T.J. Watt's the guy that can bend around the corner.
When you look at the two top defenses in that division, any doubt in your mind, are they head and shoulders better than Baltimore when you break down those two teams, or are they better by a little bit?
Well, I've only seen – I'm actually about to put on Baltimore-Cleveland's film here in about 30 minutes when we get done here. So I've only seen Baltimore's first game, but I know they're very versatile at safety. And when you're versatile at safety, and that's one thing that Pittsburgh really – is not necessarily. When you're versatile at safety, you become very good with disguises, and you can also match up in your coverages. And so you can play man-to-man, and that gives you even more opportunities to disguise. So Baltimore, I don't want to say Pittsburgh would ever be head and shoulders. I don't think that's the case. Those are two excellent defenses, though, and I'll have a better answer for you if we talk this time next week.
You know, speaking of what you do, when you look at a game and you break it down, all right, so you're going to go look at the Baltimore-Cleveland game. How much time will you spend on that game?
If we're talking both sides of the ball, by the time I review my notes from last week and go over the snap count and everything, it probably takes 5 to 6 hours, depending on how the game goes. Those teams are pretty schematically diverse, so that's going to take a tad longer, so probably 5.5 hours.
And are you breaking the games down based on a recording of the game on TV, or are you breaking it down on different angles?
No, absolutely on coaches' film. Yeah,
okay.
You can't do that stuff on to TV games. Drive me crazy. I enjoy watching it for the entertainment, and you can see a little bit, but there's a lot you can't see. So this is on the coaches' film network,
which is and I think that's awesome, and I think fans know what you're referring to. I had to ask that question because we just had someone text me about how you go about doing your work. But I mean, so you're looking at every play. You got the coaches thing, and listen, let's face it, you're looking at the film, and that does not lie.
No, the film does not lie, and there's two ways it doesn't lie. One, in what happens, and two, in what they're trying to do. Coaches tacitly, they tell you how they feel about their players and their situation by the plays they call, the formations they use, who they put on the field, when. All that stuff matters a lot. It's not just the bottom line of, well, how many rushing yards did he have, how many snaps did he get. It's who's doing what and when. And you have to look at that from an all-22 perspective usually.
Yep.
Because the spacing of it, too, how they're lining up, all of that's very informative.
You know, and I love that. And I would love to see if you get a chance next week to look at the Carolina-New Orleans game, because I'm asking myself, how on earth is Carolina going to exist offensively without Greg Olsen? I want to see it. I just don't believe it. I don't see how they're going to function without him.
Yeah, that's a big question, and they're already changing. That's the other game I have to watch. I'm doing that one tomorrow morning. They, Carolina-Buffalo, they're already changing their offense, supposedly going to more quick strike stuff to fit Christian McCaffrey. That's an enormous change from what they've been doing with Cam Newton, a huge, huge change. So now to remove the one safety net, the one mismatch maker that you did have in the passing game downfield, I'm with you. That might be an insurmountable injury for them.
Hey, it's always great catching up with you. I really enjoy it. I think that, you know, we learn a lot listening to you. I know you spend so much time on the film and really dissecting the game, and we really appreciate you coming on, Andy. Have a great weekend.
All right, thanks. Enjoy your show, too. Thanks, Grant.
Hey, thank you. That's Andy Benoit, SI and MMQB.